You got a friend in me.
You got a friend in me.
Celebrate friendship and beyond during the first ever Pixar Fest with the all-new Pixar-themed fireworks spectacular and your favorite park parades. Celebrate from April 13th through September 3rd, only at Disneyland Resort. Visit Disneyland.com for details.
There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you.
You got a friend in me.
Entertainment subject to change without notice.
77 WABC. And now, the longest running program in the history of 77 WABC, Religion on the Line, with Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick.
Good morning and welcome to Religion on the Line. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick.
We also have Mr. Michael Savilli, who is producing our program, and Bruce Clayton, who is handling the phone calls. 1-800-848-WABC is the number. Deacon has said that we walk with two angels on our shoulders. One is the angel of memory, the other is the angel of hope. Today, during the program, we're going to talk about both, but there is so much memory as we recall the tragic death of firefighter Michael Davidson.
And he gave his life the way he lived his life for others. He was the lead man. Terrible thing happened. He got lost within the context of fire, which most of us don't understand what that means. But the smoke, it creates a surreal reality. And this tragedy leaves four little kids, seven and under. Wife was a teacher in Valley Stream. Just a very, very sad, sad day.
Horrible. Son of a firefighter, brother of a firefighter. And as you say, here are people who have so much to give and yet are ready to give their lives to save lives. And trapped in that basement, it was dark, overcome with smoke. You have a warning on your oxygen supply. It's about a 7-minute warning. But, you know, you also have to find your way out, and somehow he got separated from everybody else. We're going to have Fire Commissioner Dan Nigro with us this morning talking about this firefighter, talking about the tragedy, talking about two other of his colleagues who lost their lives in Iraq in a helicopter crash, along with five other military people in Iraq. So it's a difficult week. Here we're talking about Holy Week. We have Bishop Massa discussing the beauty of that period for Christians.
And we have Passover.
We had the Passover going into it. Again, memory and hope. But I think that's what life is. Life is filled with contradictions. You know, you sit at a Seder table, parsley, salt, water.
Right.
Moro, bitter herbs, charoset, sweet mixture.
Right. For us, Good Friday, Easter Sunday. You have the two. They go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah. As I'm looking at you, I'm also looking behind you with the screen. We have hundreds of thousands of young people. I say the following. God bless them.
100% right, Joseph. God bless them. And people who say they don't have the right, I don't have words for it. But I'm so proud of what young people are doing. They're getting involved, and they're giving their opinions, and they're not letting people put them down. God bless them.
And if you watch snippets of it, what were they asking for? Sensible gun control. No speaker got up and said, we want all the guns taken off the streets from all the people. So let's not indulge in that hyperbolic, that exaggerated argument. We need sensible gun control. I'm tired of also hearing about how guns don't kill.
Yeah, I know.
Of course, guns don't kill on their own.
But knives don't kill. Right,
you know,
right, yeah,
cars don't kill, but a gun in the hands of the wrong person, a car driven by an irresponsible driver, a knife with someone who has murderous intent.
But what's a gun's purpose?
You know,
it's to put a hole in something.
But it's just nonsensical, and people think, you know, that you can just sell this kind of argument, and there are those ready to accept it.
Well, thank God these kids got up and said the emperor has no clothes.
You know, I tell you, if I were a politician and I were taking money from the NRA, I'd be a little concerned. These are your future voters. They are. One of the things that you heard them say is they're not just going to come and protest. There's a day after the protest. They're going to participate in the democratic process.
And this has got legs. My friends were at Bishop Ahern was there in Staten Island on an event. He said, this is a right to life issue. This is a right to life issue. I have to be with these people. I was very proud of him. It's just a great, great movement. But friends of mine, the Gunthers were there, among other people. I'm just very proud of them all. I'm sorry I couldn't be there.
You know, We're the adults. We're supposed to be the grown-ups, and we're supposed to teach our kids. This is a case where the kids who are becoming grown-ups are teaching us.
Very quickly becoming grown-ups. You know why? Because people went into their school and shot them.
Yeah.
All right, this is not so arrogant. This is not like smoking dope or some stupid thing they're going to say. These are kids whose lives run the line.
And after they were shot, not just Parkland, but we can go through all the other names, nothing was done. These kids in Parkland somehow have been able to inspire so many people to come together. This should have happened after Sandy Hook. We should have made some changes then, right?
Sandy Hook, definitely.
Yeah, you go through all of these tragedies, and nothing was done. So to all the politicos who believe status quo is acceptable, I think you're in for a major surprise. Major surprise, and rightfully so. All right. You know, I was looking at the story of Pastor. We're going to have Rabbi Kermai with us from Israel later on. You know, the matzah is simply flour and water.
Our Eucharist is tied directly to it. I mean, there's no question about
flour that. Flour and water, 18 minutes, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that story, and I was reading some commentary, and it said the following. Isn't it true that some of the most valuable possessions of life are some of the simplest possessions of
Amen,
life?
Amen, brother.
Right?
Preach.
Right? That we sit together with our kids. It's no toys, no games. None of the other, luxuries of life, but simply talking to them, that's one of the most important moments of life. Flour and water, make the most of it. I think I mentioned to you, I asked my son, Harrison, what do you remember most about growing up? And I thought he was going to say, well, when we went to Mexico, when you bought me that, the train set. He said, when we were in the car talking to each other, that's what I remember the most. We got to, take notice of what's important. All right.
A lot going on, but we have to get to commercials so we can get to Mr. Nigro, Commissioner.
All right. Religion Online is brought to you by Sherman's Flatbush Memorial Chapel. Visit them online at shermanschapel.com.
Religion on the Line will continue right after this on WABC New York. 77 WABC.
Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick, 77 WABC.
I'm Rabbi Joseph
Tess. I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick. Just a quick correction. I said Bishop Ahern. I meant to say Bishop O'Hara. You know those Irish names confuse me all the time.
Ahern, O'Hara, Goldberg, Iceberg. We know all that stuff, right? All right. It is a great honor to go to our conference line and speak with FDNY Commissioner Daniel A. Nigro. Difficult time, but who better to talk about what has transpired than the commissioner? Good morning, Commissioner Nigro.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And thank you for being with us today.
Thank you also, Commissioner, for being here. It's a tough week, I know.
Yeah, my pleasure, Deacon.
Commissioner, I was saying to you offline, here we were sitting together at a interfaith Seder on Thursday. We sat together, we celebrated the moment, we wished each other, a holy, blessed period for our respective traditions. And then this tragedy happens. I remember King David used to have a ring, and on the ring it said, this too shall pass. Whatever the moment is, this too shall pass. Is that how you live your life? Do you always feel that, my God, I'm enjoying this moment, but something tragic could happen? Does that go through your mind often?
It has to. It didn't, I think, at one time in my youth on this department. You have nothing but optimism and... I don't think it was a factor, but especially post 9/11, it comes in waves in the fire department, and it can't be avoided. So it doesn't leave you, the fact that at any moment the phone could ring and it could be another tragic event.
I remember a firefighter saying, you've heard this many times, that, he kisses his family goodbye, walks out the door, in the back of his mind, or maybe even closer to the front, he thinks, this might be the last time I see them. To live with that thought is so hard to comprehend, but that is the reality of the position.
It is. Thankfully, I would say, and this is from personal experience, having been the son of a firefighter, I think the families think about it more than the members each time someone goes off to work. I think the worry stays with their with the wife and children, hoping that they'll come home. Yeah. And most of the time they do, of course. But you know, the other night, Michael didn't come home. Wife and four children, worst possible thing.
Talk about Michael. You know, son of a firefighter, brother of a firefighter, beloved by the community. I mean, there were so many testimonies given by members of the community, but all he did, you know, the plowing the street for everybody there. And it's not unusual. Whenever we have these tragedies, we hear about someone who is connected to faith, to family, to community.
We hear it over and over. You know, they're the person on the block that's the go-to guy, so to speak. If you need something, you know, go to Mike's house. And it seemed each and every instance when we lost a member, they seemed to be that person for their neighborhood. They were a coach of the team. They were the active on the PTA. They did this. They did that. They were just giving people and friendly people.
Commissioner, one of the things that I've been asked many times is that you have firefighters who are so gifted in so many ways. Someone like Michael, we'll talk about colleagues who were lost in Iraq, who could be successful in so many other walks of life. And yet, of all the different choices, they want something where they endanger their lives. Talk about that DNA.
It's, you know, an example is that this kid, Tripp Zanettis, you know, I say he was a fire marshal for us. He took a leave after he graduated top of his class at NYU, of course, before he came in the department. He takes a leave and he goes through not just law school, but Stanford Law School. He's a pilot in the National Guard, Air National Guard, with three tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he's a firefighter. So what does that tell you about him? You know, he's just, he could have done anything he wanted, and yet there he was over in Iraq helping people.
We're speaking with Commissioner Daniel E. Nigro from the FDNY, and it's obviously a really sad day, not only with the loss of firefighter Davidson, but also two other of the men, Zantis and Raguso, who were killed in Iraq. You know what? The fire department's pretty small in one sense, and there is amazing on the 6 degrees of separation now. You know, at least in my world, you end up knowing every firefighter somehow, not directly, but like 1 or 2 or 3 degrees away. And that certainly was true with firefighter Davidson. His wife was a teacher in Valley Stream for a long time, and she knows my cousin, blah, blah, blah. When they spoke about it, there was a lot of pain in our school because there are a lot of connections. We have the Longs, who were also connected to him, and I think in the same house. So when I said, oh, the poor kids, and then somebody said, and I can't remember who it was, but they said, FDNY never forgets their people, and these kids will be part of the family for the rest of their lives. Can you talk about that?
Well, even before 9/11, certainly we didn't forget, but it was a mantra at 9/11, and it's been so, you know, now nearly 17 years later. Yesterday we had our fourth post 9/11 funeral in 2 weeks, and out in Wanto, Long Island, that street was just full of firefighters. I mean, I don't know if there were 1,000 in uniform there. It was an incredible turnout, and this will. This will go on, unfortunately, for the department, but the members will continue to support the families. They just will, and they'll always be a part of those kids' families. But you know, of course, they can't replace the ones we lost. They can do their best, but you know, there's no replacing a mother or father.
But they'll be there for intangible ways as well, correct? It's not just going to be thoughts and prayers. Like, there's actually going to be people there and money there to help this family, correct?
Absolutely. You know, they're doing improvements to the home. They're there if someone needs a ride somewhere. They're checking in on people. And they're there for whatever that family may need. And, you know, thankfully, the department and various foundations, the FDNY Foundation, this Tunnel to Towers, Silver Shield, has been providing financial for the family. But it's the non-financial
right.
support that is really important.
Commissioner Nigro, I know you're a person of faith. I know your church. I know your minister. We obviously represent our respective faiths. But as I was saying to the deacon, we talked about this. It is so difficult to walk into a room as a person of faith, to embrace someone else, and to try in some way to explain, and you find that you really have no explanation. It is one of these tragedies of life that all you can do is hold and hug the person. I think that's the most important, not to get into any kind of theological explanation. I don't think anything is going to be satisfactory here. We're at a loss for words. People are at a loss in their own way. What do you say to a family?
Well, I never try to explain it, explain the loss. You know, it's God's will, it's his time, it's this, it's that. It's trying to provide comfort. Mm-hmm. It is all you can do. And, you know, to say that the department is there for you, we can't take away your pain. But as far as all your other needs, we can take care of that. That part, you don't have any worries. But you cannot explain it to anyone, and no one's been able to explain it to me. So,
yeah, no, look, we search our traditions. You know, we look for answers, but as we say, the heavens are higher than the earth. We simply cannot fathom the whys. We know the what, and we know what we have to do. And we've often spoken of that ministry of presence, being there, giving, you know, the strength and support to those who are hurting so deeply is the best theological response that we can
get. The only theological response that has any value.
Yeah, and FDNY does that so well. And again, I mean, you talk to these families, they're people of faith. You know, they're very proud of their faith, and they'll continue to hold on. I think, Deacon, you said to me, you know, it's challenging sometimes to believe, but what's the alternative?
Life without God is far worse than life with God.
Yeah.
Well, this week, the FDNY will surely be tested, and we'll bury three brave members starting Tuesday at St. Patrick's Cathedral, 10 in the morning. Firefighter Davidson, and we'll go on. You know, we get knocked down, we stand back up, as Jim Leonard always tells everyone, but sometimes it feels a little more difficult to get back up.
From an outsider, and you know, I feel like I'm a cousin, I'm certainly not part of the family, but I'm a little outside of it. I've been around you guys for a long time. You're going to have 15 more people wanting to come up. You know, the Notre Dame, we say next man up, next person up in the case of FDNY, and it amazes me that more and more people want to be involved. Yeah. Even in the midst of the tragedy, they see the bigger picture. And it's a tribute to the leadership of the department. It's a tribute to the legacy of the department. And it's a tribute to the men and women who serve in the department.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Look at after 9/11, right? Look how a department rebuilt itself, having lost 343 and then more, you know, suffering with 9/11 illnesses, dying from those illnesses. And yet, here you are today, you know, stronger than ever. It's a great tribute to so many people who helped to begin again. So, Commissioner, here we are, Passover, Easter. You'll be going to church. I'll be going to the synagogue. We'll be praying, you know, for the safety of our people. And memory and hope come together. So thank you for all that you do each and every day. And I've been privileged to know you for many years. And your family, they admire you as well. They see the commitment you've made, and they make the commitment in their own way. So,
well, thank you, and to your colleagues, our chaplains, that we would be tough for us to live without you folks. You were, I seem like I see one of you every day, at least.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see each other in some celebrations of life as well.
Correct.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Okay.
77 WABC.
now, the longest-running program in the history of 77 WABC, Religion on the Line, with Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick.
Welcome back, Religion Online. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick, and I wanted to let you all know that the news was brought to us by our friends at Calvary Hospital.
You know, Deacon, one of the gratifying aspects of being in the clergy is we're privileged to meet some very special people, and you and I have been blessed in knowing many, and one of them who rises to the top of the list, obviously, is Bishop James Massa.
What a delightful man, and a truly a gift. He's the Auxiliary Bishop of Brooklyn. He's also moderator of the Curia in Brooklyn, and just one of the finest guys I've had the privilege to work with. He's been a very good friend to Severian and to education in Brooklyn and the area completely. And he, this is a little quick thing on him, he was able to get three bishops to agree on one seminary system, which is just below Palestinian and Israeli discussions. That's how you have an idea.
And not only that, do you remember when he was the convener of the gathering at the 9/11 Museum,
right.
9/11 Memorial for the Pope Francis.
He was able
to get representatives of different faiths in the room, able to provide seats for everyone. I remember calling him saying, look, we need two more, three more. He says, you're killing me. But yet he was able to do it. So.
Although I do like when he says, Kevin, can I see you? I get a little nervous. I just got to let you know that. I get a little nervous when I hear that. So, Bishop, are you with us?
Yeah, good morning, Rabbi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Holy Week, Bishop.
Thank you. Thank you. I am parked safely off the BQE just to allay your fears.
Well, you know, that's an oxymoron because just sitting on the BQE anywhere you can park usually it doesn't move.
You know, there's an old joke, you know, that God created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh, he started on the BQE.
Bishop, we come into the holiest point of our liturgical year, and what's nice this year is that our Good Friday and Passover are right the same day, actually, so it's always great when that connection is there. The Eastern Easter is only a week off. They begin their Palm Sunday next Sunday, so we're all in the same general time period, which is kind of nice this year. What do you tell people? We have all kinds of people, obviously. We have people who have been with us every day, you know, their whole lives, and they're into it. We have people who really have made Lent a big issue. I have a lot of people who don't go to Mass, but they made Lent an important event, and they're looking forward to this week. What do you tell them on what to look for? Because there's a lot going on in Catholic and Christian churches.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one thing that runs through both of our religions, our Abrahamic faiths, is the you know, the theme of reconciliation. And I think that is certainly a topic that needs to be addressed in today's world. You know, we see so many tensions in our country and around the world. And of course, that's at the heart of the Christian message and leading up to Good Friday. The cross is a symbol not of violence, not of hatred, but of reconciliation and God's mercy. You know, they're wonderful, and we draw so much from the Jewish scriptures in helping us understand our own faith. I'm always taken, Rabbi, by that the beautiful gesture in the Passover, which will be celebrated in Jewish homes on Friday night. Correct?
Correct.
This coming Friday.
Mm-hmm.
When they take the little drop of wine and place it on the plate. As a reminder of the blood that was shed by their enemies, the Egyptians, who were persecuting them. It's just a wonderful expression of concern for the enemy, concern for the opponent. And it hints at that kind of reconciliation, to my mind anyway, that we both prize so much in our respective traditions.
You know, it's interesting. It's taken from the Talmud talks about the angels celebrating. God says to the angels, how can you celebrate when there's been this loss of life? And we take that and emphasize the importance of, you know, caring about others, even those who are adversaries. And I said to the Interfaith Seder the other day, and I've said this many times, you know, look at the relationship today with Israelis and Egyptians. Doesn't that remind us that the adversary of yesterday can become the ally of today? And you talk about reconciliation. And isn't that, you know, proof that, you know, where there's a willingness to come closer to one another, we can do it. But we have to have that willingness.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a powerful symbol. You know, for us, to listen to the words of and the reading of the Passion today, which is done on Palm Sunday, you know, those Catholics who may only come to Mass on special feast days like Palm Sunday, today they get punished in a way because they hear the longest gospel, mm-hmm. the reading of the Passion. But it's powerful, and you know, the words of reconciliation are present. Jesus reaching out to the good thief who is crucified alongside him. The forgiveness he speaks from the cross. The words at the Last Supper about the Eucharist, the institution of the Mass, which is his own Passover. You know, he draws on the Jewish tradition, but it's taken up into a new meaning that he gives it. And it's all about being reconciled to God and one another. That's the heart of it. That's the core of our faith.
You had spoken about symbols, Bishop, and we're speaking with Bishop Masso, Auxiliary Bishop of the Diocese of Brooklyn. And this week is replete with them. We begin with our palms today that'll be given out the Mass, and then Thursday with the washing of the feet, Friday with the veneration of the cross, and then Saturday night, especially Saturday night, the blessing of the fire, the blessing of the candle, if you're lucky enough to have people coming in for baptisms and confirmations. I people tease and say, well, what is this week? I say, well, it's like the Super Bowl. This is the Super Bowl for Christians and Catholics. And I think it's wonderful that it touches people. You don't need a degree in theology to be kind of overwhelmed by the events of this week and the beauty of it. And if you're in a place that, and most places do, thank God, that have beautiful liturgy, they spend time thinking about the music, the ritual actions, and all that comes together. It really is like a 3-day symphony, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night.
It is. We call it the Triduum. You know, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday night into Easter Sunday morning. Of course, the threefoldness of our Christian Passover, our Christian Paschal mystery. We draw on the Greek translation of the Hebrew Pesach, and we call it a Passover. We refer in the liturgy and again to the Paschal mystery. So it is absolutely our Super Bowl.
Yeah. Bishop, Deacon, you know that Good Friday for Jews has a troubling history, and thankfully it's changed. But when you look at earlier narratives, historical narratives, you find that Jews would hide on Good Friday. There were sermons that preached hatred of Jews. They were referred to in liturgy as perfidious Jews.
It was in our prayer.
Right. Talk about where we are today as opposed to where we were.
Yeah, I mean, light years. I hope and I would like to believe light years away from that time of mutual estrangement and of Christian persecution of Jews and Jewish communities. There's a passage from one of the talks of the retired German Pope Benedict XVI. You know, as a child, he was attending Good Friday services with his family, his parents, his sister, and his brother. And it was just as Nazism was emerging in Germany at the time. And whenever he heard anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish remarks in the community, or later on as Nazi ideology co-opted Christian texts to justify their heinous policies, you know, he said he was dumbfounded because he looked at the cross and everything about it is reconciliation, it's mercy, it's forgiveness. So that this symbol became a source of fear and apprehension is just one of the tragic ironies of Christian history. And, you know, it has led in modern times to Christians examining their history, examining their catechetical texts, you know, the materials we use in religious instruction, how we prepare our homilies, how we interpret the Gospels, a real examination as to its implications for our understanding of our older brothers and sisters of the covenant. And that's the Jewish people.
You know,
so it's been critical, a critical part of our reappraisal of our own tradition.
Deacon just showed me what the words say today, and you know, how the words of love, words of acceptance and recognizing the Jews, and, you know, praying, you know, for them as well. Not for them to convert.
No,
but
no.
For them, you know, where they
are. Just for the record, and Bishop won't admit this, but I get big points if I ever get you.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bishop, are you preaching today?
I am. I'm off to a mass in Queens, and I am giving the homily, and it's a short one because of Palm Sunday, the long gospel reading.
My pastor asked me if I could give a short homily. I said, of course, Father, yeah. I will always give a short homily.
And what is the message you're conveying today?
Well, you know, I think the message is one that draws on the Old Testament psalm, the Jewish psalm, Psalm 22. Jesus says the words, my God, why have you abandoned me? Why have you forsaken me? And, you know, it was only in listening to rabbis and in various dialogues and realizing that when someone prayed the first line of a psalm, they intended the whole psalm.
Right.
It, you know, and what we learn is that as Jesus prayed that psalm, the rest of the verses of the psalm indicate that it's a movement from forsakenness or feeling abandoned, rejected, to one of trust and thanksgiving to God for the anticipated liberation, rescue. So in other words, it's not a psalm of despair, it's a psalm of hope. And that just struck me, and I would not know that if I weren't reading Jewish literature and learning from my Jewish colleagues.
Bishop, I want you to know that the people at the 11 o'clock Mass in Our Lady of Peace in Limburg thank you for this.
Even though they won't hear it from you, they do thank you in their own way. Yeah. Say, Deacon, that was brilliant.
Well, brilliant homily.
You know,
I spent time with the rabbi.
Look how Bishop Bassett, you know, took my stuff.
We're in different places, so I think we'll be all right. Bishop, you're always a delight when you come on. You're a man of faith, but you're also a man of hope and great joy. And whether it's at a meeting in the diocese or on the radio or just when you come to Zvarian, you are a great gift. And I just want to say thank you for all that you do for our church, for our local church, and for just the people of God, whether they're Catholic or Christian or Jewish or Islamic or Hindu or all the other faiths that you work so diligently with. So, Bishop, it's a great opportunity to begin Holy Week with you.
Yeah.
It's also a great opportunity to say thank you.
Oh, thank you, Deacon. And Rabbi, you're a great team.
Well, let me just say this to you.
Listen to both of you.
One of the things that we admire about you is that you have, I don't want to say a perennial smile, but we know you with the smile. And it's so refreshing to have a member of the clergy who isn't angry all the time, who's warm and embracing, because that's the spirit that we need. Just make us one promise that one day when you're elevated and may become the Pope, you'll still come on the radio with us. You know, you won't forget us.
You'll hear a very bad version of Italian, if that ever happens.
Thank you so much. It's really, you are, you know, we talk about how close we are to one another in respect and love. You're one of the people who is responsible for that transformation. So thanks so much for all that you do.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Have a great Holy Week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick will be right back on 77 WABC. 77 WABC.
35 years ago, things were different in the world. But Religion on the Line was here, helping make sense of it all. Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick, 77 WABC.
Welcome back, Religion on the Line. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick, and this portion of Religion on the Line is brought to us by our friends at Calvary Hospital.
You know, Deacon, during Passover, and before Passover, actually, we take time to cleanse the house. But the cleansing doesn't just stop at the house.
The chametz, right?
Right, the chametz. Very good. You know,
I've learned chametz.
Get a little more of that phlegm.
Don't you sell me your bushel? that's a yes. Highlight of the year for me. I just let you know.
Yeah. And the remarkable thing is we get it back from you.
More or less.
Yeah. Okay. So, but you have to cleanse, get that, you know, the leavening and the leavened products out of the house. But you also have to cleanse it from your souls. And you look at the schmutz that is going on in our country. You have tonight, you know, the interview with a porn star. And I think everybody, it starts at the top. You need people to look at themselves and to say, what is my responsibility? You know, we in the faith community insist upon a moral compass. And I'm so offended by clergy that are ready to sell their souls and just look away.
Well, let me just be specific. And I'm talking about a branch of evangelical Christians who go out of their way to condemn someone who's gay, who go out of their way to condemn anybody who transgresses a law. They forget about the forgiveness of God. And I get that. I've already factored that in. But the fact that they can give someone a pass like this. And now look, if you're going to say that God is forgiving and you're going to do it across the board, I'm with you. But when you, and I, Rabbi, I agree 100%. When you sell your soul to bend over backwards and do moral calisthenics and gymnastics to try and fit in, that somehow this is God's plan or this is God's character. And by the way, I don't think anybody was God's, except maybe David, Jesus, Moses. No, that's different. The saints. But these are politicians, whether it's Clinton or Bush or Obama or Trump. But their moral for fortitude or lack thereof has to be taken into accountability. And especially if you're an evangelical who declares this. If you're not, then that's fine.
You know, there was an excellent piece.
You can't have it both ways. I'm sorry.
You're right. There was an excellent piece in one of the newspapers, and A.R. Bernard, who was part of that evangelical grouping, he removed himself.
You got to get
away. He said, look, I can't tolerate this. I can't put a stamp of approval. And that's what is sad here. You cannot make something kosher that's non-kosher, you know, in this fashion. There's got to be a complete change. And I'm sorry. It's not the fault of, you know, CNN. It's not the fault, you know, of CBS. It's not the fault of, you know, all the other sources. It's the fault of those who perpetrate the wrongs. And you cannot give them this kind of green light to say, do whatever you want as long as you're good on one issue. It doesn't work. When people of faith do that, we all lose. We all lose. Because if we don't insist on some kind of moral behavior, not perfect, let's stop with that word perfect, but some basic moral code, if we just delete that, then what are we really about? And who are we? What do we have to offer if that's what we're ready to sacrifice? So I don't want to hear people saying, I'm religious, but this is okay. I'm sorry. It's not okay. And if you say it's okay, you're not religious.
My skin crawls because I've heard my Christian brothers and sisters say, this is God's hand-picked prophet. And I'm like, please don't do that.
Yeah.
Because if you said that about Al Sharpton, they'd go apoplexic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? Al Sharpton, maybe not as bad in the moral factor. I'm not saying, you know, I'm sure I got beat up for that, but here's the bottom line. Does he ever say, you know what? I messed up big time. I did some very bad things. I made bad choices. I'm sorry. Please pray for me.
And I ask you this. Many of us are parents of children. How do we explain to our children that this behavior for some people is acceptable and for other people is not? When our kids say, you represent a certain moral standard, does it apply to everybody, or does it apply to some people but not those in high places? If you're ready to be that selective, then please don't talk about being a person of faith. It doesn't work that way. And again, people look to us as exemplars of decency. If we don't represent the best of our faith traditions, then I ask you, who will? So let's stop pointing fingers all around. I see these emails, they're sickening, and I just delete them.
You
look at the first few words and I know, forget it. And some people, I told you, automatically go to junk. I won't even read what they have to say. But if you claim to represent a decent standard. And by the way, stop preaching about saluting the flag and taking a knee with the flag and all this stuff about respecting the country. If you don't respect a moral standard vis-a-vis other humans, then stop the preaching.
Respect your wife. Yeah. Respect your children. Yeah. Our buddy Larry, who I love, Larry's one of great guys, yeah. He put up a meme and said, let he who hasn't had an affair with a porn star after your third wife giving birth to your fifth kid, let them be the first to cast the stone. Larry, you're 100%
Larry Goldberg.
Right.
All right. When we come back, we're going to go to Israel and speak with Rabbi Yaakov
Kermeyer. He's one of my favorite people. Yaakov Kermeyer. I cut you off when you said his name. He's one of the greatest men I know. It's like you and then him.
And I'm glad you got that secret right.
I knew my bread is butter.
All right. Stay tuned. More of Religion.
You're listening to Religion on the Line on 77 WABC. 77 WABC.
Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick celebrating 35 years of Religion on the Line on 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick.
And this is Religion on the Line. Rabbi Yaakov Kermeyer, one of the greats.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the second greatest rabbi.
Second greatest rabbi I know.
Rabbi Yaakov Kermeyer, Rabbi Emeritus, Fifth Avenue Synagogue here in Manhattan, founder of Yakir, an ambitious community initiative in Israel, past president of the New York Board of Rabbis. Good morning, Rabbi Kermeyer.
Good morning. It's great to be with you both again. Wonderful to be with you.
All right. So you don't have to say next year in Jerusalem at the Seder, do you?
It is amazing. Yeah, somebody called me up and asked me, do you guys say that in Jerusalem at the end of the Seder? And we do. And I think it's a prayer that Jerusalem continues to, to really grow into its potential. We're in the capital. It's a miracle unfolding. But there's still some redemption to take place.
Yeah, well, it certainly takes on more meaning this year, given the recognition of the United States and other countries of Jerusalem as the capital. Finally, there are those who are ready to say publicly that Israel has a right to the capital, and that capital is Jerusalem.
I'm actually shopping around now for a big American flag because my home has its windows looking right over the soon-to-be embassy compound. And I'm looking forward to unfurling my American flag next to my Israeli flag along the side of the home as they inaugurate it.
Well, I have about 100 rabbis that want to stay with you when that becomes official. I think May the 14th is the scheduled date for the opening.
We're firing up the barbecue and we're bringing in Samuel Adams here.
All right. So, Rabbi, one of the traditions we have, and Deacon has attended Sidorim over the years, and one of the beautiful traditions, you have one of the people, very often a grandparent, hiding a piece of matzah, and the children searching for it. And looking at that entire adventure, I think it's important to say how meaningful it is, how special it is when we're able to find the hidden. And I'm not just talking about matzah. I'm talking about people who very often don't affiliate, don't participate, don't connect with community. It is a mitzvah. It's a meritorious deed. It's imperative that we go out and search for those who cannot be found easily. Wouldn't you say that that's another meaning of looking for the afikoman?
I think so, and I think it fits in perfectly with the overall theme of the Seder, where we start off by opening up our homes to everyone. We start off the Seder by issuing a blanket invitation to anyone out there who needs a place, who wants some warmth, who wants an embrace and doesn't have a Seder to join. Come and join us, because we know that there's something special that you're going to bring to our Seder. And I think that's just it. There's a hidden special quality that everyone has, and it's our responsibility to help bring it out.
I remember when I would call home before Passover from college and say to my mom and dad, what do you want me to bring home? I'm in New York. What should I bring home for Passover? And my mom would say, religiously, don't bring anything. Bring someone. Bring someone who doesn't have a place at a Seder table. That's who you have to bring in. For our Seder table, we'd have so many different people there, and many of them had no other place to go. And to me, I grew up always looking for the hidden, looking for those who may not be connected, who may not have a seat at the table. So Passover is really when we open our doors as widely as possible, not just to welcome Elijah, but to welcome the stranger and the estranged.
I think that's exactly it. And I think that's why part of the Seder talks about the different sons, I guess, in a more gender-appropriate, the different types of children that come our way. We have the ones that don't know how to ask, the ones that perhaps are bitter and acting out, and those who seem just perfect and wise. Now, but everybody is around the table. Now, even one who doesn't even know how to begin a conversation. And we know that, that there's something that each one of them can offer us and that can enrich the Seder, even if we have to help him open up his mouth and find the right words. Now, everybody has something hidden that he can offer.
I'm always bothered by the translation, and I know it's a translation of the word Russia, the wicked child, but the wicked child is sitting at the Seder table. The wicked child is challenging, can be contrary.
I had three of them. I know exactly who you're talking about.
But the word wicked, I don't know, it just seems it's the wrong name for that child.
Rambunctious doesn't really work in Hebrew, I guess.
Contrary, you know. How do you look at how do you look at that child?
Well, I look at that child, and I think as we're saying the word, that wicked child, I think it probably immediately asks us, presumably the parent, if we're talking about him as the child, to ask ourselves, well, is there really a wicked child, or is there just a child that's either been thrown into circumstances, that have caused him to act out, to rebel, to bear some resentment? I think whenever we look at children and we characterize them in that way, I think it immediately begs us to look at ourselves and say, what is it about that child that we see that's really exposing something about how we as adults interacted with that child? And I think it's a healthy exercise, because I think whenever you look at a child, a child, after all, is vulnerable and is the product of so many of the environmental factors that have contributed to who she is. I think it's the adult that is asking himself or herself the question, what is the Russia saying? What is this evil, what we're calling an evil child saying? And then we say to herself, evil child? What does that say about me?
Yeah.
What does that say about me? I think it's a very important exercise to go through. When we look at children and we see fault in them, to try and figure out what that reflects back on us.
I read an article which was entitled, "Are You on Asking Terms with Your Children?" We talk about speaking terms, but the Seder says, are you really on asking terms? Have you created an environment where you can talk to one another and ask questions comfortably of one another, hopefully getting answers? But if you don't have an answer, you say, I don't have an answer. But I think that asking spirit is something that has to pervade not only the Seder table, but the relationship of parents and children.
I think the question form of the Seder is really an essential part of the whole experience. I think that actually the four questions that are famously positioned at the beginning of the Seder are really artificial questions, because they're not genuine questions that any child could really ask, because they're questions about what's going to happen later in the Seder. Why are we going to dip twice? Why are we only going to eat matzah? How would any child really know that if they hadn't experienced it or if they wasn't being fed the question? And I think what the Seder's really doing is it's for us a format. And it's telling us, if you really want to explore freedom, if you really want to explore what it means to be living in an environment where you can chart your own religious destiny, the best way to do it is by asking lots of good questions. And so it sets the tone for us.
We're speaking with Rabbi Yaakov Kermeyer. He used to be in Fifth Avenue Synagogue, and now he's a part of the founder, actually, of Yakir, an ambitious community initiative in Israel. And even though you're several thousand miles away, you're still very much a part of what we do here. And really, just it's delightful whenever you're on. Just a couple of a little. I know I'm not supposed to use the word goy, but we use it in a friendly term. But as a goy looking from the outside, Couple of things. One, Christians wish that this was your holy day because it's our holy week, and we know that this is like really number two compared to the New Year and Yom Kippur. So just a little disappointment on the Christian side, but we'll work through it. Second, my ability to be with Joe over these last 12 years or so and my ability to meet many, many new friends who are Jewish and my ability to be at a Seder, not that the ones that we did in school with someone coming, it's not, but to be in somebody's home. And I've had the grace to be in Alan Abramson's home, Alan and Cynthia Abramson. And it's just such a religious event. And the fact that it's tied into the Christians cannot understand the Passion of Christ unless they understand the Passover of Israel. And the fact that I've had that ability to be there in both places, from the Christian side, from the Jewish side, is the best. It really is. And my favorite part of the Seder is when we sing Dayenu. Like, he could have just said this, and that would have been enough, but he did more. I think that is one of the greatest prayers that you, and you've given us quite a few good ones, but I think that's the best.
It's actually, when you look closely at that song, it really is quite a striking song to sing, because among the things that we say, if you wouldn't have given this, it would have been enough. Now, it says, even if you would have just brought us to Mount Sinai and didn't give us the Torah, that would have been enough. That's one of the lines in the song. And you think to yourself, wow, we're saying that would have been enough. And I think what it's really saying is that we shouldn't take anything in life for granted. So we should take every blessing, and dissect it and think to ourselves, we didn't really deserve everything that we got. If we would have gotten this, it would have been more than we deserve. But God has graced us with so much more than we could possibly ever say that we deserve. I mean, I think that's the message of the song. It's really to look with a very, very, very careful eye at all of the blessings in our lives and realize how truly blessed we are.
There was a woman years ago, I remember, she had two teeth. She says, thank God they're opposite each other so I could chew, right? And, you look at life, and unfortunately sometimes when we lose something in life or someone in life, we recognize the need to be grateful for the little we often have. So it's a message. Don't wait for loss to appreciate what you do have. Look at life in total and say, look at, I'm blessed to have the following, and certainly above all, the people in your life.
When I do a wake, the end of the wake, we have a prayer service there, and in the end I say, my friends, I don't envy your grief at all, but I do envy the fact that this person was part of your life, and try to remind them that.
Yeah, and when you talk about, when you experience loss, how it allows you to experience the joy and the freedom, I still remember referencing what you were saying before, about how you talk about the elder person maybe taking a special role as the Seder. When I grew up, my grandfather of blessed memory used to fly to my childhood home in Silver Spring, Maryland, every Passover. And he was a man who lost his five brothers and sisters and his parents to the Nazis. They were all murdered in Auschwitz. I mean, in fact, virtually all of his first cousins were as well, except for one cousin that survived as well. And Passover night, when he would raise up those cups of wine, you could see that he was toasting freedom, and he had this deep sense of what it meant that all of us could just marvel at, looking at his face shining like that. But we knew that he experienced it in a way that we could never experience. And I think that's a special part of the Passover experience as well, is reminding ourselves that as a people we were once slaves, but reminding ourselves that there are lots of people who still suffer, and we have to really not only strive to eliminate that suffering, but also at every moment experience the blessing of liberty that we enjoy.
My parents also were survivors, having lost children during the Holocaust and other members of the family. And at our Seder, I recall when I was young, they would invite members of the Jewish Center in Lynn, Massachusetts, and members of St. Mary's Church in Lynn, Massachusetts, because those were the two groups that helped them rebuild their lives. And they said, we wouldn't be able to succeed in our community if we didn't have these people from the community standing with us and supporting us. So it's important to recognize all those who gave their lives for freedom I hear what you're saying. So, Rabbi, the deacon has said to me he's been to some seders and, you know, 4 cups of wine and 10 plagues. He says, couldn't we change that? Couldn't we make it 10 cups of wine and 4 plagues? He just wants to reverse that. And also see, change the wine.
He says, see what I have to bear?
Change the wine, he said.
Well, that I did say.
And do I have to eat the gefilte fish? That's the 5th question he asked at the Seder. Do I have to eat that?
At least say 85% of what he just said is true. I don't get the Concord
thing. The matzah you enjoy, but the gefilte fish is the problem.
You know, it's interesting. Gentiles love matzah because we don't have to eat it. Yeah. That's the difference. We love it.
Yeah. How long is your Seder?
You know, I grew up with Seders that lasted until 3 to 4 in the morning, and on a number of occasions, I remember as a young child that it was already starting to get light out, so we decided we would just have our own private service together at the end of the Seder. So we were really into it all the way. Now that I have young children in the house, we usually wrap it up around probably 2 o'clock in the morning, but it's still a real event.
It's an early night.
Take naps before. Yeah. No, the younger ones take naps before because it's something that they look forward to.
Yeah.
They all prepare very a lot of material while they're in school so that they'll have things to contribute to the discussion. It's a real engaging event. It's not just reading through a Haggadah.
What's your favorite food, fellas, quickly? Just what's your favorite food of the Passover?
I really love the matzah. Yeah. I really do. I enjoy the matzah because it has a message. It's like you're tasting history.
Right. But with what's the sweet?
The haroset.
The haroset is very nice with that.
Rabbi.
And yours, quickly?
Mine, matzah meal pancakes.
Nice.
Take the matzah flour, mix it with eggs and brown sugar, fry it up, and it's heaven.
You know,
it's not corned beef and hash, but it's okay.
And don't tell your doctor that's what you had. But I tell you, see, when you're the rabbi of Fifth Avenue, you're a connoisseur.
Yeah,
you know,
big time.
Anybody else has played matzah with them, it's a matzah.
All right, with rabbi, all this matzah, drink a lot of water. That's all I got to
say. Rabbi, thank you. To say we miss you in New York is an understatement, but I will say we look forward to seeing you in Jerusalem. Thank you for all that you've done over the years and continue to do.
Thank you to both of you, and I wish you all a happy and healthy holiday. And to everyone who's listening, you know, please, God, we should all join in prayers that the liberty that we celebrate and too often take for granted should be a liberty enjoyed by all of the oppressed people in the world.
All right.
Sweet Passover, Rabbi. Sweet Passover.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick return right after this on WABC. 77 WABC. Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick, 77 WABC.
A blessed Easter and Passover, everyone. Next week, Easter on the line.
Easter on the line.
Enjoy it.
Amen, brother. Sweet Passover for you.
Let's bring a little more charoset into the lives of those who taste a lot of moral.
NJDiet.com studios, 77 WABC, New York, a Cumulus Station News, now.
9 o'clock, go to church.
Or shul.